We're finishing our discussion on text 42. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Mataya Manasu Yat Praninam Pratifalan Smaratam Upetya Lila Yatena Bhuvanani Jayat Yajasram Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajam. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose glory ever triumphantly dominates the mundane world by the activity of his own pastimes, being reflected in the mind of recollecting souls as a transcendental entity of ever blissful cognitive rasa. Well, yesterday we discussed about the glorious position of Lila Purushottam, Sri Krishna, and especially the power of his transcendental pastimes to purify the heart and attract the heart. And in fact, it is these pastimes that are meant to be the subject matter of meditation for the devotee as he advances on the path of bhakti, comes to the platform of Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. Then Lila Smaranam, remembering Krishna's pastimes, will come to the devotee through the merciful blessings of the holy name and the purity of his consciousness. So, and continuing those points, there's some points about what's actually going on. I mean, it's called sadhana. We're in the stage of practice where we're practicing to sing about Krishna. We're practicing to hear about Krishna. We're practicing to remember about Krishna, remember Krishna's form, his glances, his activities, his qualities, his pastimes. So we think this is a practice, and when we perfect this practice, then we go on to something else. We graduate to another level or to another activity or to another situation. But actually, this is exactly what the situation is in the spiritual world. That those that are siddhas, that are not, they're no longer practicing sadhana, it's no longer regulative practice for them. They're not sadhana bhaktas, they're siddhas, the eternal nitya siddhas, eternal associates of Krishna in the spiritual world. They're not practicing to chant and practicing to remember Krishna's form and his name and qualities, or practicing to remember Krishna's pastimes. That's in fact all they do. All they do is have pastimes with Krishna and then remember them. There's one feature you'll see in Govinda Lilamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj, or in Krishna Bhavanamrita, is called Rasudgara. Rasudgara means that when the beloved hears about their beloved in their absence from the mouth of a friend or an associate. So in the morning time, after Radharani wakes up in Yavat, and she'll be bathed and dressed, and she's feeling great separation because she hasn't seen Krishna for 45 minutes or so. Because she left Krishna in Nidiban in Nikunj in Nishant Leela at the end of the night at around 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:10 in the morning. And now it's 6 o'clock, 6:15, and she's waking again up in her own private bedroom at Yavat, being woken by her grandmother, Mukura, and her mother-in-law coming afterwards, Jatila. So then she's feeling, oh, where's Krishna? It seems like forever. Just like sometimes we may have the experience if we fall asleep, even for a few minutes, that you go to another world, another sense of time, another sense of space. Then you wake up and you think, well, where am I? You think 1,000 years have passed, or you don't even know where you are. And then you go, wait a minute, it's only 10 minutes later. And you're in the same room. So even a short, brief rest in her home, when she wakes up, she feels very much pain of separation from Krishna. So then one sakhi comes, a Surit Sakhi, a friendly Sakhi, who's also Yuteshwari, a group leader. Her name is Shamala. And Shamala comes, and she says, oh, Radharani, I have some good news. And Radharani says, oh, Shamala, you have such a twinkle in your eye and such a glow in your face. You seem full of joy and happiness. What have you seen, or what have you experienced? Oh, and then Radharani asks another question. Where were you? Where have you come from? Oh, I have come from Nandagaon. And what I've seen Krishna's waking and his bathing, and his friends are gathering there, and then they're going to the barn to milk the cows, Goshala. So then she starts telling Radharani about what Krishna's doing right now, and then she starts reminding Radharani not only about Krishna and his active pastimes, but also reminding Radharani, seeing the different features of Radharani's body and how she was looking in different her face and different things. And then Shyamala could surmise that the pastimes that already were during the night with Krishna. So then she was saying, all these things are going on now with Krishna and Nandagam, but I can see also a wonderful festival of pastimes has already gone on in the forest of Vrindavan with that Nagara Krishna. So, and then Radharani, of course, feels she blushes and she turns a little red in embarrassment when Shyamala can detect her intimate pastimes with Krishna. It's called Rasodgara, that she's again reminiscing and relishing the pastimes. So this is this practice of hearing about Krishna, remembering Krishna's pastimes and form and singing about him. This is, we're starting now, it's a practice and it's difficult and it's hard to hold these things in our mind. It's hard to keep our attention on these things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in Harinam Chintamani that distraction to other things, or what we call inattention, which is sometimes listed as the 11th offense to the holy name, to be inattentive while chanting. Being distracted to other things or to be inattentive while chanting is considered to be the root cause of all the other 10 offenses. So we have difficulty paying attention to these things, attention to the chanting of the holy name, or keep our attention fixed on the meditation on Krishna's form, or what to speak of his pastimes, which are practically impossible to remember. Even if we read, we may read a short description of a pastime, then close the book and then chant japa and then try to remember, okay, what was that pastime that I just read? Something Krishna is there. Krishna and Vrindavan. Oh yeah, some gopis are there. Some trees. You know, gradually this really dull, inert, slow, lazy, rock-like, mind starts to move according to what we want it to do. And we want it to be our friend, as Krishna says in Gita, this mind up there can be your friend or your greatest enemy. The uncontrolled mind is the greatest enemy. But if one's mind's controlled, I mean, control means under your control. That's what it means. I mean, it's under. Usually, we're under the control of the mind. The mind says, do this, we do that. The mind says, do that, this and that. We follow the mind. We just like the dog follows. The nose is in front of the dog, right? Behind the nose is the dog, right? The first thing you see is the nose, and then behind it is the rest of the dog. 1% of the dog is the nose, and 99% is the back behind the nose. But what's that 99% doing? Simply following the 1%. Just following the nose. Wherever the nose goes, the dog goes. Wherever the nose smells, the dog goes. So the same way, that mind, we're like, that's our nose. Wherever the mind... There's different levels of realization. Because we are also devotees. We are what is known as kanishtas, or beginners, those without nishta. Kanishta means those that have the faith is very weak. The nishta means faith. The faith is very weak, the strength and conviction of their belief is very weak, and their steadiness and regulated behavior in their practices is also very weak. It's like sometimes up and sometimes down, sometimes good and sometimes bad, sometimes fast and sometimes slow. That's kanishta. Then there's madhyam and uttam. So we're also devotees, and so we look at this verse, and this verse can apply to those that are kanishtas, it can apply to those that are madhyams, and it can apply to those that are uttams, and it can also apply to the nityasiddha parikars, or the eternal associates of Radha and Krishna. So they're also doing this activity, praninam, manasu praninam, pratipalan smaratam upetya, Smartan Lila Yatena. Lila Smaranam is being reflected in the minds of those who have pran, for those who have life. So, also another meaning of praninam means not only, as it's translated, those who have life. Prana means the living principle, or we say pranayama, which is regulation of the airs which carry the living principle. The living principle is carried by the life airs, and pranayama means the manipulating those 10 life airs. So praninam also means those that have not only prana, but it means love, because love is also life. They say that there is life without love is death. If life without love is death. How do you like that? In other words, if there's no love in a person's life, it's better they be dead, because they're not actually experiencing what is the meaning of life. So in this verse, when Brahma is saying that yak praninam pratifalan smaratam upetya lila smaranam pratifalan. Pratifalan means that in the mind of those who have pran, then lila smaran, these pastimes are reflected. Pratifala means reflected. So pran can also mean those eternal associates of Krishna. They're also alive, and theirs is a life of love. This is prema jivan. Their life is made of love. So therefore, they're described like with this same word. They're called pranasakis and pranasakas, right? Priyasakas and prana, pranasakas. So this means dear, it means very dear, beloved. So what is their meditation? How do they meditate and do lila smaranam? So I have a small description. That the gopis' meditation on Krishna, they showed the best example, they show in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto of Bhagavatam, chapters 29 through 33, and chapter 21, and chapter 35, and so many different places. They show how to meditate upon Krishna by remembering his transcendental nam, rup, guna, and lila. Names, forms, qualities, and pastimes. They were so much absorbed in remembering Krishna that they couldn't tell whether Krishna was present or absent. The Brajagopis could constantly see the pastimes of Krishna going on in their hearts, which means samadhi. As I mentioned yesterday, we were discussing about smaranam, how there's different levels of smaranam, beginning with just occasional remembrance of the Lord's pastimes, a few moments, a glimmer here, a glimmer there, and not being able to be attentive or hold on to those pastimes due to the impurities in the mind and inability to concentrate for a very long period of time. So that's the first level of smaran called smaran. It's simply smaran. The topmost level is called samadhi. Total absorption in one point means complete absorption of mind, heart, senses, emotions, everything, and the pastimes of the Lord. So the gopis were in this praying samadhi of, you know, lila samadhi, of meditating on Krishna's pastimes, when he would be separated from them. So they didn't even feel any separation. So in the gopis' praying samadhi, it's also called swarasikhi meditation, which we discussed previously about this mantra upasana and swarasikhi. When Uddhava visited the gopis in Vrindavan, having come from Mathura, he told the gopis to save themselves from the fire of separation by closing their eyes and remembering Krishna's pastimes. So that's, of course, exactly what they were always doing. Even when Krishna was there, when he left them in a rasa dance, they also closed their eyes and remembered Krishna. And they were so much absorbed in this bhav of remembering Krishna and their love for Krishna that when they opened their eyes, they didn't see a gopi in front of them. They saw Krishna. Each gopi, they thought the gopis were Krishna, or they saw themselves. I'm not a gopi, I'm Krishna. And they saw the other gopis. Hey, you're Putana. Hey, I came to, you know, restore religion and kill the demons. Get out from here, Putana. Hey, Kaliya. I'm gonna crush your head. Get out of here, you rascal. So they were, and one would identify and get on the shoulders of another one and start dancing on her shoulders like Krishna dancing on the hoods of Kaliya. This is called Tanmaya. They were totally merged in oneness with the pastimes of Krishna, that they felt, I am Krishna. So this is a point, separation in Krishna's pastimes on their level. So this is their level of Lila Smaran. During Krishna's pastimes, when Krishna left Vrindavan, what vision did the gopis have? Krishna made and gave them many promises about returning to Vrindavan. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadev Goswami explains that Krishna never fails to keep his promise. And after killing a demon, Dantavakra, which was outside of Mathura, Krishna returned to Vrindavan for 2 months and enacted his Prakat Leela, or manifest pastimes, in Vrindavan, as a coward boy with all the gopis. During that time, Krishna took all his eternal Vrindavan associates and entered with them into the unmanifest Aprakat Leela in the spiritual world, so he would not be separated from them. Externally, he appeared to be separated, because he went back to Dwarka after those 2 months. But some acharyas explain it like this, that Shamsundar Krishna never left Vrindavan, but he actually stayed in Vrindavan and performed his Aprakat Leela with the resonance, his eternal associates. Some of the gopis, however, like the wives of the demigods, who were benedicted by appearing in this Prakat Leela, or manifested Leela, and sometimes, in some places it says that these wives of the demigoddesses, they were the, you could say, kanyas, they were like virgin girls who saw Vamanadeva when he was passing through the universe with his extended legs. They saw Vamanadeva, and they became attracted. So then later on, when they grew up, they became attracted to him with some kind of intimate feelings, because they were young girls, teenagers. So then he blessed them that they could experience that, fulfill their desire by appearing in Braj Leela. There's like 20 or 30 different categories of personalities who appear in this Leela. So then acharyas explain that these demigoddesses, these Vandevis, they came and they entered into the bodies of the Nitya Parishads, the eternal gopis. They came and kind of became an avesh with them. They kind of became part of them. And then when Krishna came from, you know, when he's in Dwarka and he killed Dantavakra and came here and had pastimes, then when he took all his eternal gopis and associates back to the spiritual world, he separated that demigoddess portion from them. And they stayed in this Vrindavan. So that's why the acharyas say that some gopis, however, like the wives of the demigods, could not see Krishna's Aprakat Leela, because that's his eternal, unmanifested pastimes in the spiritual world. So these gopis thought that Krishna had left Vrindavan, because he came for 2 months, then to their vision, he left and went to Dwarka. So they said, oh, Krishna left. But the gopis with prema, the gopis who have this pure prema, they never lost sight of Krishna. The example also is given in Rasa Dance in chapter 29 through 33, 10th canto. Krishna apparently left the gopis. But by reading these chapters, one can understand that the gopis were totally absorbed in remembering and seeing Krishna. Remembering and seeing Krishna due to the intensity of their pure love, Krishna Prem. And as a result, they never actually felt any separation from Krishna. The gopis' internal and external eyes were always fixed on Krishna. The gopis never experienced actual separation from Krishna. The apparently small time away from Krishna only intensified their meeting with him. Separation acts on the eternal associates of Krishna to nourish and enliven their pastimes of meeting, which is the highest state and gives the highest state of unlimited ecstasy. In this material world, the feeling of separation from Krishna is the highest. Therefore, the sadhaka in the material world always feels separation from Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where is Radharani? This is the teaching of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the six Goswamis. To search for, to find, and to meet Krishna by developing intense feelings of hankering and separation. The ultimate goal is not to be separated from Krishna. That's not the goal. The ultimate goal is to be with Krishna and serve him constantly in love. Separation serves to heighten the intense pleasure of union. Even in the spiritual world, there's some separation. It's explained that sometimes Akrura, he comes to Nandagram and he takes Krishna for a few days because Akrura is his uncle and he lives in Mathura. So sometimes a child will go and visit his uncle, go to his uncle's house and stay a few days. And then so that's what the acharyas explain. Sometimes he goes and visits his uncle's house for a few days. And while Krishna is away, the Brijvasis, the residents in Vrindavan, they think that they had a bad dream. And then when they wake up, they see Krishna again. So what happens is that Krura comes, this is in the spiritual world, in Nitya Vrindavan, not in this Boma Vrindavan. But Krura comes and he puts Krishna on the chariot and then he goes away and where's he going? And then they think, then he goes away for a few days, then he comes back after 2 days, 2-3 days in Mathura playing with his uncle, eating, you know, all kinds of sweets and para and all nice things over there. And then when he comes back, then the Brijvasis, Nanda Baba, Yashoda, all the gopis said, oh, he's back. Oh, I must have been dreaming. I had some dream. Krishna left or something? No, he didn't. Oh, he's here. Okay. I had some bad dream. I don't know why. So this is the only kind of experience that they really have. So, although this you see this feature of separation there in the gopis and in the coward boys also, and also in Vatsalya Ras with Yashoda, Nanda Baba. But it's simply there, even in the separation, they're with Krishna. So this is our bhajan, is to remember Krishna. And this verse is about that, Lila Smaratena. And then, it's as we mentioned yesterday, it says that Smaratam upetya lila yatena bhuvanani jayati. Bhuvanani jayati. One attains victory, jayati, over Om Bhurbhuvaksva. He attains victory over the material world by absorbing his mind and heart in the transcendental pastimes of Lila Purushottam, Sri Krishna in Vrindavan, who's the conqueror of all mundane heart, whose loveliness vanquishes the god of mundane love, who conquers everyone in the material world. So this practice of Smaranam is mentioned by Raghunath Das Goswami in Manashiksha. Manashiksha are instructions for the mind, and we know very well, in this one bhajan, Prabhupada, he always sang, and he gave purport to, Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoivi Akuti. Rupa Raghunath. Rupa Raghunath. We should be akuti, very eager to follow in the footsteps of Rupa Raghunath. We want to follow in their footsteps. So what does that mean? Does that mean, as I mentioned the other day, that we walk, when the guru walks, you walk in his steps. As he takes a step, you walk behind him and step in his footprints. So, but following the footsteps means to follow his teachings, to follow his instructions, Anukaran, Anusharan. Anusharan means to follow in his footsteps, means to follow his teachings. To be very eager to study the books given by Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami, and not just listen to them, as I mentioned yesterday, but to hear them with an open heart and mind, and with a heart, with a desire to transform the heart and mind. So, Raghunath Das Goswami in Manashiksha, in shloka number 9, he gives so many instructions to the mind. Give up deceit, give up hypocrisy, give up pratishtha, desire for honor and distinction, and all these things. And then he gets to instruction number 9, and he talks about smaranam. What should we remember? Because, of course, the topmost remembrance is lila smaranam, to be absorbed 24 hours a day in astakali lila smaranam. But that's the perfection of life that will come after some intense practice and receiving the mercy of the Lord. So he addresses his mind, and he says, Smaramana, oh dear mind. He says, listen mind, oh dear mind, you should always remember. Then he lists so many things you should remember, dear mind. You should remember 7 different things. But now you can ask yourself, well, what do I remember every day? Well, I remember to sleep every day. I remember to eat every day. I remember to dress every day. I remember to bathe every day. I remember to... you know, like that. So there's 4 or 5 things. And we remember them every day. We wake up and then our memory works. Oh, yeah. But he's saying something a little different here. First thing we should remember is Brajavipina Chandra. Brajavipina Chandra means Krishna in Vrindavan, who enjoys in the forest, that wonderful moon in Vrindavan who enjoys in the forest. So he's telling his mind, so that's what we're also told in the deity worship book. It says there that when one wakes up, even while he's just climbing out of the well of ignorance into the light of the new day, he should cry out to the name of his Ishtadev. Hey Krishna Balaram, hey Radhasham, hey Giridhari, hey Guru, hey Prabhupada. So this is the first thing we do, is we remember Krishna and Guru. So He sells the mind. Okay, mind, remember. Then, the second person we should remember Radhika, but not just Radharani without any kind of identity, but Radharani as my personal Swamini, as my Swamini. And we should pray for her service, thinking of one's identity as a maidservant. One may have another particular Staiva, but he's giving instructions to the mind here, and he's saying, remember as a maidservant. The idea is, remember yourself as a servant of Radharani. So whether you're a gopa or a mother or whatever, you'll be ultimately a servant of Radha and Krishna in one Stayubhav or permanent devotional mellow or another. So remember Radharani as one's Ishvara, your Swamini, her mistress, and pray for her service. It's like this morning in the Bhagavatam class, there was a tape by Srila Prabhupada. So he was, during the course of his delivery, he was explaining about the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra. If anyone heard the class, and he was saying that meaning, he's saying, Oh Radharani, please, you engage me in the service of your Krishna. This is Prabhupada telling in 1966 or something. The tape class is a very old class. This is a very beginning conception or meditation on the meaning of the holy name, which should be injected into the mind when one takes the holy name and chants japa. You should inject the meaning of the holy name. Oh, Radha, oh, energy of the Lord, please engage me in the service of your Krishna. So, we remember Krishna and Radhika. Then the third person we should remember, according to Manashiksha, is remember Lalita Sakhi. Remember Lalita Sakhi as the best friend of Radharani. Then the fourth person we're telling our dear mind to remember, Smara Mana. We should remember Vishakha as our Shiksha Guru. How is that? Well, Vishakha, Shiksha Guru means Kripa Shakti Murti, as does Diksha Guru. They are the form of mercy of the Lord. The Lord's mercy descends through the agency of Guru. Descends through the agency of Chaita Guru, the Super Soul guiding us at every moment, internally. And Krishna's mercy descends externally through the form of so many Shiksha Gurus and Diksha Gurus, the 24 Gurus mentioned in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. So much mercy is available. Krishna's mercy is everywhere to be had to the sincerely surrendered soul. There's no shortage of opportunities to access oneself to the mercy of Krishna if we're willing and desirous. We'll get so many teachings and so many instructions. So Raghunath Das Goswami in Shloka 9 of Manashiksha, he's saying, oh dear mind, remember Vishakha as your Shiksha Guru. So on a higher level, on the level of Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti, Vishakha Sakhi will instruct the Manjari, the Sarak Manjari in his internal Smaran, or externally, in the on level of prema, when one enters that pastimes, Vishakha Sakhi will act as one Shiksha Guru to teach that Manjari how to properly make pan, or how to properly play veena, or how to properly sing different ragas, different teachings she may give. But she has another form by which she instructs as a Shiksha Guru and gives mercy in this Bhoma Vrindavan. And that is her liquid form, where she expresses her desire to serve the Jalkeli Leela, or the water pastimes of Radha and Krishna, by expanding in her liquid form as Yamuna. Yamuna Devi, the river of Prem flowing through Brajadam, is an expansion of Vishakha Sakhi, who is acting in that way to act as a Shiksha Guru, because a Shiksha Guru gives mercy. Mercy means instructions. Instructions means by following those instructions, by surrendering to those instructions, what happens? One gets purified anarthanivritti of anarthas, lust, anger, greed, envy, madness, intoxication, false ego, enjoying propensity, controlling lordship, etc. becomes removed by one who submits to the instructions of the Shiksha Guru, follows them, attains the mercy of Krishna coming through that proper channel. So the idea is, the Shiksha Guru gives his mercy, and then you become purified. And then you increase your ability to become attached to Krishna and ultimately develop love for Krishna. So how does Vishakhasakhi act as Shiksha Guru? She acts as Shiksha Guru in Vrindavan by manifesting her Shiksha form as Yamuna Devi. So Yamuna Devi is a Shiksha Guru because when you go to Yamuna Devi and you offer Yamuna Ashtakam, or you offer prayers to Yamuna Devi, and you take snan in Yamuna Devi, and you offer some of Yamuna Devi's water to her and to her father, she's very pleased when you offer Yamuna to her father, because she also worships her father, Surya Dev. Then she blesses you. What does she bless you with? Her mercy. And how does that mercy take shape when you receive the mercy of the Shiksha Guru of Vishakhasakhi in the form of Yamuna Devi? We become purified of our sins. Just like the mercy of Shiksha Guru purifies us of our sins. So those different philosophical points are explained in the Yamuna Ashtakam by Rupa Goswami, where he glorifies in 8 prayers the name, form, qualities and pastimes of Yamuna Devi. So the Yamuna Devi is non-different from Vishakha, because right now it may be a little difficult for us to receive Shiksha from Vishakha. If we're on the level of Raghunath Das Goswami in our bhajan, chanting, you know, sleeping an hour a day and chanting at least a lakh of rounds and eating 100 grams of buttermilk every other day, if we're on that level, we can go into samadhi and meditation. We can go into meditation and chant, and then we can have a spurti or a vision of Radha and Krishna's eternal pastimes. And we may meet on the footpaths of Radhakund, we may meet Vishakhasakhi there in our meditation. And she may call us to the side, "Hey Rati Manjari, hey Manjari, I want to instruct you about some service I want you to do. I want you to make a special flower garland, a Vaijanti Mala with these 5 flowers which some other Manjaris have picked. Now you have to make it with this pattern. In this particular pattern, 2 white flowers, 1 red flower, 2 yellow flowers, like this." And so and then you're seeing that, you're getting that instruction from Vishakhasakhi in your dream. She's your Shiksha Guru, she's instructing you in your internal meditation. Right? This is high-level meditation. And high-level Shiksha from Vishakhasakhi. And then you come out, and you come out of that vision. Whoa, such a nice, my Guru, I saw my Guru today. I had a dream of my Guru. Sometimes we have a dream of our Guru. Right? We dream about our Guru, we have a dream of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada gives us some instruction, some Shiksha, or some chastisement. It's also Shiksha. So, Raghunath Das is saying, "Hey, dear mind, please remember Vishakhasakhi as your Shiksha Guru." So, that might not be possible for us to contact Vishakhasakhi Shiksha in that form of deep, intense, advanced meditation of an advanced devotee. But at least we can contact Vishakhasakhi Shiksha in the form of Yamuna. So therefore, in this Yamunaskam explains, Yamuna is non-different from Vishakha. In this liquid form, Vishakhasakhi serves Radha and Krishna. Vishakha is the embodiment or the form of Yamuna. Yamuna is kind of like somewhat, water is somewhat formless. It takes whatever shape it's put into. So Vishakha is the Vapu. Vapu means rupa, or form, of Yamuna. Offering prayers to Yamuna means offering prayers to Vishakha. So in Yamuna Ashtakam, Rupa Goswami explains the different glories of the Yamuna or Vishakha. Same thing, because they're equal to each other. One is freed of sins by desiring to bathe in Yamuna. That might be the only about as close as we get to it. It's interesting, if you see one purport, one in Prabhupada's, I think it's in Bhagavatam, I quoted in our book, Appreciating Vrindavan, where Prabhupada says, the purpose of this, since it's all this kind of anniversary, jubilee, you know, kind of mood is there. So the purpose of establishing the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan is to give the devotees of ISKCON a chance to come to Vrindavan and to associate or to hear about Krishna Vrindavan and to bathe in Yamuna. But if one does by chance put a drop of water on his head from Yamuna, then that will destroy the most heinous of sins in his heart. And by bathing in Yamuna, one will increase the flow of Raganuga Bhakti, or spontaneous devotion for Krishna within the heart. And if it's not flowing there, it may even start it. It may start the flow. If it's not flowing, the shloka Yamanashtakam says it increases the flow of Rag Bhakti. I'm just taking out the English points of these different Sanskrit terms in the Yamanashtakam. Increases the flow, and we can also understand by that, if it's not flowing, or it hasn't even sprouted out of the ground, maybe it can bring it, that flow, the Yamuna, will also make something flow in your heart. Believe it or not. Prabhupada lived for 6 years at Radhadamodar, and every day he went to bathe in Yamuna. Haribo. So everyone says, Prabhupada Anuga, Prabhupada Anuga, Prabhupada Anuga. Oh really, what's this Prabhupada Anuga? Prabhupada never said it. We're supposed to be Rupa Anuga. But if you want to jump up and down and say Prabhupada Anuga, then follow in the footsteps of Prabhupada. You bathe at least once a month, or on Ekadasi or something. Bathing in Yamuna causes Krishna's transcendental pastimes to arise in the hearts of those who take her shelter. Bathing in Yamuna causes the direct manifestation of spontaneous devotion in the hearts of devotees. The flow of Yamuna's waters carries within it the direct revelation of the unique transcendental pastimes of Radha Krishna Yuga. Now the fifth thing we're supposed to remember, according to Manashiksha, we should remember Radhakund. And the word is used in this Shloka 9 of Manashiksha, Priya Saro. Sara means essence, or it means also lake. It's Rasa, Sara. Priya means the dearest lake, or the essence of all essences. One should remember that Radhakund bestows sublime rati, or attachment, for the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. This is something we should always remember. So by remembering these different personalities and different transcendental places, we will purify our consciousness and purify our mind and receive great mercy therefrom, which will enable us to come to the ultimate goal, which is 24 hours a day to always remember Krishna and never forget Him, which in this particular verse we're told to do Leela Smarana, remember the transcendental pastimes of Gauranga and also of Radha and Krishna. Number six, we should remember and pray to Vishakha for attachment to Radha and Krishna and darshan of Radharani's lotus feet. So this is, again, Vishakha is being presented here, that we should remember her and pray to her, because we're praying to her for what? For kripa, for mercy, because she's Guru, she's Shiksha Guru. So we pray to her for attachment. Please, Vishakha, please bless me with attachment to Radha and Krishna. And especially, please may I someday have darshan, Radhacharan darshan, darshan of Radharani's feet. And she's so kind to us, Vishakha's so kind, that every year on her birthday, she's in a very happy mood on her birthday. So when Vishakha's birthday comes, she opens the doors and says, look everybody, here's Radhacharan darshan, you see? Did you see? Because that on her birthday, it happens to be Radhastami. It's the birthday of Vishakha. So on Vishakha's birthday, she's very happy and she wants to give everybody a birthday cake. She wants to give everybody a gift. So the prayer, you pray three attachment to Radha and Krishna, and please bless me a darshan of the lotus feet of Radharani. And then she does. So kind. Then the seventh personality we should remember is Giriraj Govardhan. Oh, Giriraj Dharanaki! We should remember Giriraj Govardhan and the various places of Radha and Krishna's pastimes there, which will bestow attachment to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. So attraction, attachment, these are all required. Because you cannot remember something unless you're attracted to it. You cannot remember something unless you're attached to it. Right? So you have to hear about the thing you want to remember, then you become you're attracted to it, then you hear about it, then you hear about it, become attached to it. So what Raghunath Das Goswami is telling us, he wants us to become full of Krishna Prema. He's the Prayojana Acharya. He's the Acharya of Krishna Prema. He's the Acharya, the goal of life. The Prema Pumartha Mahan. He's the great goal of life is Krishna Prema. And he's the treasurer. He's the emperor of Radhakund. And he's the treasurer of Krishna Prema. And he's the Siddhanta Acharya, Prayojana Tattva. And he's teaching us, please everyone, I want to give you this Krishna Prema, like my Lord Gauranga. Krishna Prema Pradayate. He is Krishna Prema Pradayate. And I am also Krishna Prema Pradayate. I am empowered by him. So I'm giving you these instructions for your mind to remember. So by remembering Brajavipina Chandra, Radhika Lalita Vishaka, and Yamuna, Radhakund, and again, praying for the mercy of Vishaka and Giri Govardhan, then we will develop our attachment to Radha and Krishna and to their pastimes. As our attachment develops more and more and more, then automatically that brings so much purity which enables us to absorb our mind 24 hours a day in the eternal pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So this is the conclusion of verse 42. If there's any questions. Relationship between Vishakha Devi and Lord Balaram. Well, there's kind of a very complicated tattva that I once heard my guru by Padmalochan explaining to me, which I've never read, it's not a very good, Guru Shastra and Sadhu. So one Sadhu, Padmalochan, wrote a book, Chintamani Dham, and some other different books, early days of all the different books about Vrindavan. He was explaining some relationship about, because sometimes explain that there's Balaram, of course, expands into Mahavishnu, right? I mean, Chaturvyuha and Mahashankarshan and ultimately Mahavishnu, Purushavatars. So, also, from Balaram and his expansions of Sankarshan, Sankarshan expands into Sadashiva and Sadashiva expands into Shiva. Okay. So, he was explaining that Vishakha, coming from Mahavishnu, it's kind of like there's a relationship between Vishakha and this Mahavishnu. And the reason he was explaining that, because I asked the question, why is it that Sanatana Goswami always did his bhajan near Shiva Lingas? Chakaleshwara, Bankandi Mahadev, Gopishwar Mahadev, Nandishwar Mahadev, and Kameshwar Mahadev. He moved everywhere, but when he would stay somewhere, he would always stay, and every day he would take darshan of the Shiva Lingas. So he was explaining that Sanatana Goswami, in his Nitya Sarup and Sakhi Sarup, he's Labhanga Manjari, right? And Labhanga Manjari is very, very closely associated with Vishakha. Labhanga Manjari wears the Prasadi Vesh of Vishakha, the clothes of Vishakha. Labhanga Manjari has a blue sari with stars on it, just like Vishakha, because it's her prasadam, it's her remnants, right? So Sanatana Goswami, there's a relationship between Sanatana Goswami and Shiva, because there's a relationship between Sanatana Goswami's Sakhi Sarup as Labhanga Manjari and Vishakha. Now there's also a relationship between Shiva and Vishakha, and that's what he was explaining to me. That Balaram, who expands into Sadashiva, who is transcendental, he expands into one form as Vishakha in the form of Yamuna or something to serve Radha and Krishna. Because Balaram is always serving, he's a Seva Vigraha. He's always serving Radha and Krishna's pastimes and all the rasas. So Balaram, Sadashiva expands into the Shivas of this world, but then so that's a Shiva Linga. So then Sanatana wants to be there next to them. But Sadashiva also expands as the Yamuna, which is a liquid form of Vishakha, because in that form, Vishakha can serve the transcendental pastimes of Radha and Krishna, or Jal Keli, and the cows and cowherd boys and all that. So that's where you might say there's a relationship between Vishakha and Balaram in that regard. Because Balaram is a Sevamurti and he wants to serve in so many ways and he expands his form, Anantashesh, and so many other forms. He expands his Krishna's slippers and Krishna's bed and Krishna's Dham itself, which the holy Dham of Vrindavan is an expansion of Krishna, of the Sandini Shakti of Balaram to serve Radha and Krishna's pastimes. But within that holy land of Vrindavan is also the Yamuna River. So Yamuna River is Balaram, but it's not Balaram, because it's also Vishakha. But Vishakha is like an amsha of Balaram. So this is a kind of tattva which was explained to me by Padmalochan, which has some kind of sense. But I haven't come across these particular fine points. So I'm just saying that this was some discussion amongst some sadhus, Guru Bhai and myself, who were understanding. So this is the answer to your question, the relationship between Vishakha and Balaram. It's a tattva vichar. It's a consideration of tattva. And if you consider Leela vichar, or the consideration of Leela, I don't see too many times where Vishakha Sakhi is associating with Balaram. Sometimes, but not so much. Because he has his own Sakhis, and Vishakha is one of the Astra Sakhis of Radharani and one of the Yuteshris of Radharani and with Krishna. She has Milan with Krishna. There may be something. Because then if you go into Gaur Leela, and then you try to understand, because we try to understand, because the Gaur Leela is called Parishishta Leela. Parishishta Leela means like the epilogue. You write a book and then there's an epilogue. You write the whole book and you say, oh, there's an afterthought. It's called the epilogue, or some final chapter where you may again explain something. So Parishishta Leela means that Leela which fulfills what may be unfulfilled in the previous Leela. So Gaur Leela is considered Parishishta Leela of Radha Krishna's Braja Leela. This is the term that the Acharyas use. So to sometimes understand Radha Krishna Leela, you can examine the Parishishta Leela, because they're one and different. There's the Audarya aspect of Gaur Leela, and which is missing from the Radha Krishna Leela. So that's the Parishishta, the contributing aspect. So to understand this question, you can also examine the Gaur Leela. So therein, you want to examine the identities of Vishakha, and you have the identities of Shiva, and then you have Advaitacharya. And then Advaitacharya, because this is all part of what he was explaining also, Padmalochan Prabhu, is that Advaitacharya, who is also Shiva, you know, it's considered Shiva, part of Shiva, expansion from Shiva, Mahavishnu and Shiva. So he came to Vrindavan before Sanatana Goswami, and he realized a deity of Krishna. And that, you know, he had a dream, and he manifests his deity of Krishna called Madan Gopal. Now, he left that deity with a Brahmin called Purushottam Chobe in Mathura. Sanatana Goswami came here, and he went to Mathura, and ultimately there's a whole pastime where that deity wanted to be with Sanatana Baba, and then he received that deity. He renamed that deity Madan Mohan, who is now in Karoli. So this is, the Madan Gopal was the deity of Mahavishnu, of Advaitacharya, who is Mahavishnu, who is Shiva. And then here again, Sanatana Goswami, who is so close to Shiva, doing his bhajan of Shiva, he gets to worship the same deity that was worshipped by Advaitacharya, who was also Mahavishnu. So again, and also in Gaur Leela, you see some kind of connection with these tattvas. And then, that's food for thought, let's say. But to resolve this question, you would have to take what information you received today and take it to more advanced devotees and say, we heard some discussion, what can you bear out with this? Because I never had the time to, I even had in one of my notebooks on Vrindavan, I have a whole chart with all these different personalities, because I've made a chart of, you know, there's Shiva and there's Mahavishnu and then there's the Advaitacharya and then there's Sanatana Goswami and Labhanga Mantri and... It keeps us out of trouble. Yeah, Rupa?
Could we also have to do something like when Balaram calls Jamun and then she started to move so he was like, I'm getting more
already. Oh, there's an interesting point. That the relationship between... The relationship between a couple different times with Balaram and Yamuna, right? Once he was intoxicated and And I wanted to, and then also in Hastinapur, he wanted to pull the whole city in Yamuna. So there's also a relationship between Vishakha. Vishakha in her liquid form is Yamuna in Balaram. She surrendered to him, and so that's there. Ado Shraddha Tata Sarasanga Bhajana Kriya. No Shraddha, no advancement. One who thinks that the Ganga or the Yamuna becomes contaminated by bubbles or bodies or, you know, paper mills in Delhi or sewage or effluent, if he thinks it becomes contaminated, he has Naraki Buddhi. Naraki Buddhi. He has the intelligence of hell. So you can take your so-called Western conceptions and you can take them where they'll take you. Your Western conceptions and your lack of faith will take you to hell. Clean, unclean. You are a dirty mess. Your heart is blacker than coal and you're finding fault with Yamuna? Good show. Good luck with your Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You won't get the, you know, first base, as they say. Well, to speak of, hit a home run. Impossible. It's again a question of faith. Faith makes a man and faith breaks a man. If you don't have faith, you attain prema. If you have no faith, you don't get anywhere. Take another birth. Faith is required. So our faith will be attacked and assailed in so many kalas and deshas and patras, so many times and places and circumstances. There's the leap of faith, and you know, the leap into the Yamuna. Haribo! Oh, it's all full of green. Radhakund is all green stuff in there. Oh, I'm not bathing there. Ew, gee. Oh, gookie, wookie. Really? Well, can we look inside your heart and see how crystal clear and pure it is? Do you mind if we like Nrisimhadev, and let's bifurcate your chest for one moment? And we'll use psychic surgery to heal it back up. Let me look inside and see how sweet smelling and how clean your heart is. Really? Your heart smells just like what comes out of your bottom side every morning. Your heart smells the same way. Because if you were a Mahabhagavat, what comes out the bottom smells like roses. So if that stuff is anything less than roses, then that's what your heart is like. And so you're trying to say, oh, it's dirty. I might get sick. You're already sick. You're already sick. You're completely diseased. You ought to be better off dead. Because there's no greater sickness than a lack of faith in God. That's the greatest disease. To have no faith in God. That's the disease of the animals. Animals have no faith in God. Believe me, they bathe in Yamuna. We'll get a human birth for that one. Bathing in Yamuna. Oh, you're so smart. You're so advanced. You're so civilized and so intelligent and refined. And your heart is full of lust, greed, envy, anger, and the blackest, dirtiest of desires, the most filthy, unmentionable things that you want to do with this man or this woman or this animal or this boy or this girl. But you're too advanced to bathe in Yamuna. I feel great pity for you, my dear friend. So, Jivana Maharani ki jai.